The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Well, I guess we'll go ahead and get started. We'll probably have some people walking in late, but we should punish those who are on time. So I just want to welcome you all to this information session. My name is Mary Ann Aranjani, and I run the Marshall Brennan Project, and I teach the seminar for the students that are in the project. We call them Marshall Brennan Fellows. You might have heard that term around the school. This program is a really dynamic program that trains law students to teach high school students about their constitutional rights and responsibilities. And we do that in elective courses that we've designed in conjunction with the District of Columbia Public Schools in public schools throughout the city. The Fellows make a year-long commitment. It's about 15 to 20 hours per week. And I want to emphasize that it is about 15 to 20 hours per week. Some fellows might spend on the lower end of that. Others, you know, even more than that, depending on how much they get involved with their students and how much they enjoy lesson planning and all that. But it is a very significant time commitment and not something you should, you know, enter into until you feel that you really can devote it. Because unlike other activities like journal or moot court or anything else, you actually have live people that are depending on you and, you know, if you're not there or you're not able to really prepare as much as they deserve, it's a real problem for us. So I just put that out there to get the, you know, harsh stuff out on the front end. We started about 12 years ago. We had almost immediate success in D.C., so much so that our students were all over the country for summer internships and had friends all over the country, and word about the program started to spread pretty quickly. And so now we actually, WCL is the home of the national headquarters as well. We have 12 law schools around the country now that have Marshall Brennan chapters, including one in South Africa in Cape Town that just launched this past fall. And we're in the process of helping about 7 or 8 other law schools start Marshall Brennan chapters. What that means for WCL students, I think, is that you know, you're part of something that's really a movement. It's not just this. And we're a big program here in D.C., to be honest. We're in about 15 different schools, which is quite a large number. But really, it's part of a much larger movement to bridge the gap in civic and constitutional understanding of young people through the vehicle of energetic law students. So I think that's pretty exciting. It also means that we're able to do a lot of cool things, like have a national competition for all of the students from our chapter to get to meet all of the students from other parts of the country who are in Marshall Brennan chapters and compete against each other in a moot court competition that we hold in Philadelphia every year. So that's sort of a very brief history of the program and the basics. It's a year-long commitment. Like I said, it is a full year. It's not a semester. And the year really starts in August at orientation, and it ends during the third week of June, which is when the DCPS calendar ends. During breaks, we ask students to figure out some way to cover their classes. You are the teachers of the class. It's not like there's another teacher actually there. Sometimes there are teachers supporting your efforts, but you're technically, you know, in charge of the class. So we you know, it's important that the fellows understand on the front end that you're going to be responsible for covering breaks. And a lot of times partners work it out. We do send you out in pairs to teach. And I encourage you, if you're really serious about this, it's not too early today to start talking to some of your classmates and figure out who's interested in doing it as well. Selecting a partner is incredibly important, and we'd rather that the applicants do that than we have to do it, because you know yourself better than I ever will, and you know your strengths and your weaknesses, and you know your classmates better, you know, again, than I will. So it's really better for you guys to kind of figure out if there are people that you, you know, have a connection with that you think would make good teaching partners. There is a 3-credit seminar each semester that is a co-requisite of participating in the program. So you'll earn credit for participating in the program. It's a graded, you know, graded course. And you'll also earn pro bono hours for the time that you spend teaching. So that's sort of the basics in terms of the logistics. I'm just going to briefly mention two other things, and then I want to introduce Ashley. And we'll have plenty of time for questions, which I find usually is the most helpful way to spend this time together. So basically, our website is up here on the board. Should be easy to find, but I know it's long, so you should be able to find it on the website if you can't jot it down right now. And the application is posted there already, so if you want to go ahead and take a look. It's quite a rigorous application process, and we've designed that over the years on purpose, because we find that we want to make sure that people who are applying to this program really fully understand what they're committing to. And that's really not only a year-long program, but really, like I said, a movement for constitutional and civic literacy and an alumni base that is really strongly committed to the program beyond their participation in the program. So we want to make sure that everybody who's participating is, you know, has the proper skills and also has sort of the right attitude towards what this commitment means, which is, you know, larger than oneself, really. It includes a statement of interest explaining how you found out about the program or why you're interested in it. And there's no right answer for that. I want to make sure that you understand that. It could just be this sounds like a neat thing. You know, I've always wanted to teach, but I never had a chance to. Or it could be, you know, the reason I applied to WCL was so I could participate in this program. We get, you know, everything under the sun, but it's just helpful for us in the application process in putting all the pieces of the applicants together to get a sense of, you know, why everyone's interested. After you submit your statement of interest and your resume, we ask you to go ahead and actually you could do it concurrently when you submit these materials and you would submit them to this email address. One of my dean's fellows is managing the process. Heidi will send you, or she'll ask you to set up a visit for going to the schools. And we ask that you do that with a partner, so that probably will take a little bit more time to identify, unless you already have a partner for some reason. So we ask that you find a partner, go and do a guest teaching spot, and we do want you to prepare significantly for that guest teaching for two reasons. One, so that you really get a sense of what it means to teach on a daily basis or, you know, every other day basis, and make sure that it's something that you want to do. And two, so that we can assess whether it seems like you would make a good teacher. Now, you haven't had any training. We know that, you know, the fellows are not going to say, you know, they got the law of the First Amendment wrong. But they're looking for it to see whether you have the basic qualities and skills to be an effective teacher. So, for example, somebody who doesn't, and we've had this happen, believe it or not, before, is that people will go in the classroom and not say a word. They'll just let the partner talk, you know. Or they'll be very shy to talk to the students. Or they weren't communicative with the fellows in setting up the visit and maybe after the visit. Those are qualities that make it difficult because we don't have an extensive training program. We have a two-day orientation in August. And so you kind of have to hit the ground running in terms of teaching. You do have the summer to prepare, and I'm around all summer, and we do have, you know, materials available for you to read and digest, and I can certainly talk with you. But there isn't any kind of real formal training other than that two-day orientation. Okay, so you'll do the visit, and when you do the visit, you'll evaluate your own performance, and the fellows in whose classes you're teaching will evaluate your performance as well. Presuming, and I encourage all the applicants to actually meet with the fellows and find out what they thought and why they, you know, why they had the feedback they did. And then after that, presuming you still want to continue with the process, you would sign up for an interview. And the interview will be a panel interview, actually, this year, including some former fellows who are now dean's fellows for the program, myself, possibly Professor Vermeil, who's also involved in teaching the seminar, and we have also a JD Distinguished Fellow working with us, who is a former fellow. So any combination of those people may be on your panel, and they'll just really try to get a sense of who you are and whether, again, you have really what it takes to be committed to this program, but also if it's a good fit for you, you know. After all of those pieces are completed, and we ask for all of that to be completed by March 18th, which seems very far away, I'm sure, but, you know, setting up a class visit and, you know, setting up the interviews and all that can take some time. So I encourage you to take a look at the application materials as early as possible. We will then look at all your application materials along with a committee of first-year faculty who presumably know you guys a little bit better as students, right? Not necessarily teachers, but as students. And then we'll decide, you know, who we're going to select. It is a selective program, but I always tell people if this is a good fit for you, if you really want to do this and you really have the skills to do it, you know, we most likely have a space for you. And you know, I can't emphasize enough how the commitment that you're making in terms of time, but also just energy and you know, beyond the program, we want you to be a committed alum to the program as well. So that's it in a nutshell. I'm going to see if there are any questions at this point. If not, I'm going to ask Ashley to talk a little bit about her experiences this year teaching at CSI Chavez Charter School. Any questions? Yeah.
I guess once you got into the program, what's the classroom dynamic like? Like, would you get a larger classroom, a smaller amount of kids? How does that work?
That's a good question. And our class sizes range from, you know, 5, although I don't like to have classes that small, but we don't have complete control because the school places the students in the classes, all the way up to 35. So there's a range. And generally, we can predict, because at X school, we've always had large classes, or at Y school, we've always had small classes. So if you have a preference, definitely when you're setting up the visit with Heidi, we want the visit to try to be as realistic as possible in terms of your possible placement for the next year. So definitely let her know if you have a preference, or if you want older students, or, you know, if you don't have a car and you need to go somewhere on the metro. All of that she'll take into account in sending you to a school. And we try our best to match everybody's preferences. As a matter of fact, most of the summer is spent on placements, believe it or not. I have a dean's fellow who basically collects everybody's schedules and then looks at your transportation situation, your partner's transportation situation, your schedules, we reconnect with all the schools and make sure we can set up classes, you know, in the schools that we want to be in. And then we take all that information, and as well, we have two different curricula. We have one called Common Law Survey, based on We the Students and Youth Justice, so people have that preference as well. We try to mix all that together and give, you know, the fellows what they preference, but we can't always make that happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Last time at the other information session, you said that you probably could intern if you're doing it at the same time.
And yes.
You're probably going to change.
At least in the fall.
Yeah.
At least in the fall. Yeah.
Well, my question is, like, if we are applying to interns, but we still want to apply to this as well, like, it's fine. And then if you decide, oh, well, I got this internship that I really want, can you, like, defer to later on?
That's a very good question. What you could do, I encourage you to pursue all opportunities at this point because, you know, you don't know what's going to pan out, and it's always good to have multiple options. So I do encourage you to apply for everything that you're interested in. But I will say, you know, and I don't mean this, basically I'm worried about the high school students getting a committed person in the classroom, and so that's where the interest in trying to minimize outside activities comes from. And again, we have 12 years of experience of seeing what works and what doesn't, and it's just nearly impossible to have certain commitments and also do this well. So, but down the line, if you're admitted to this and you also have an internship opportunity, you know, we can sit down and figure out. We can talk about it. You know, I would also say, though, the great thing about going to law school in D.C. is that you've got at least 4 opportunities to do internships, if not 6 during the summers as well, so which is unique from, you know, students going to other law schools. So it's not like you're losing, you know, out on an amazing opportunity necessarily if you don't do your internship in the fall, because you'll still have the spring semester to do it and other times as well. Did you have a question?
Yeah, about the class. Is that on top of our basic class load, or does that take the place of one of our electives?
Right, it could take the place of one year elective. So it's a, you know, the regular credits. It's an academic seminar, just like other seminars you might take. So and you'd still have, you know, a 16 credit limit. In some instances, people are able to get 17, but I wouldn't.
So how many credits is the seminar?
It's 3 in the fall semester. Actually, I slightly misspoke. In the spring, you can select either 2 or 3 credits. We do that just to give you the opportunity to take classes that might fit better in terms of the credit load. But generally, fellows pick the third credit, the 3-credit option in the spring. So it's 6 credits total.
Other questions about nuts and bolts?
Yes.
With this high school students that we teach, are these generally, like, you know, good kids? Are they going? You know, do you think fellows run into, like, misbehavior issues and stuff and have to deal with that old disciplinary action that comes with high school teaching high school kids as well?
It's a good question. You should ask your law professors that too, because I wonder who a good student.
Yeah.
If you could identify one before you even, you know, get to know them, but the truth is that we have a delicate balance. We want to offer the law students an opportunity to really teach and to learn the curriculum and to be able to teach the curriculum. And certain students are not in a place to be able to do that at this moment in time for a variety of reasons. So that's one extreme. The other extreme is that the students that are going to some of the city's magnet schools, who are in AP classes, who have very high standardized test scores, they're already on a track, and without our assistance, they're going to be just fine. So we try to pick places where we can really make a difference, where the fellows are actually going to possibly convince a student to stay in school and graduate from high school. And we have about a 50% dropout rate in DC. So even if you have a classroom where a few students decide to stay and graduate from high school who wouldn't have otherwise, it's a huge accomplishment, right? So and it varies from year to year. We can't predict exactly what kinds of issues you might have, but and from classroom to classroom, even within a given school. But I will say that classroom management is something that is something it's on our radar screen in terms of training and in terms of ongoing challenges for the fellows.
I want to add on to that. It's going to be a typical high school class. You're going to have some kids, hopefully fewer, that are just going to be loud and speak with the other kids while you're teaching. And you're just going to have to know how to handle that. I think during the application process, if you note, if you feel like you need to note, I think one of my weaknesses is being a disciplinarian. There are certain schools that statistically have less disciplinary problems than others. If you really want to do this program and that's your only fear, I would say still apply and just note that down. And maybe, it's possible to work with that. I definitely think I'm not the best disciplinarian. And I'm at a school where, thankfully, I don't think I need to get those kids in line very often. I have quite a good class. So it's not really a problem for me, whereas I know other schools, have fellows that are ready to give out detention when they need to. I think the program is able to work with different personalities and whatever you feel comfortable with.
Definitely, and also that might be a factor to consider in your partner selection. If you know that you don't like being the enforcer, then maybe you should find somebody who's okay with that. Like a good cop, bad cop.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Yes.
So you develop lesson plans and how you're going to present the class to the class. What are the requirements on this side for the seminar? What are you reporting back? What does all that look like?
Yes, that's a good question. And we do change the structure of the seminar slightly from year to year to respond to students' feedback and. It just sort of changes in the program. But generally, we have two purposes with the seminar. One is to prepare you in the content of what you're teaching, and the second is to prepare you in the process of teaching. Okay, so, we try to make it very hands-on. So, to prepare you in the content, one of the things we do is actually each pair of fellows has an opportunity to present a lesson plan to the entire class each week so that we are sharing with one another, best practices, things that work well. We give each other feedback and are brutally honest feedback sometimes. Thankfully, I think we had great presentations last semester, but sometimes, there are things that come out that people didn't realize. I look really nervous when I'm standing up in front of the class. Maybe I need to work on that or whatever it might be. But in terms of the requirements of the seminar, we do ask you to submit a number of written pieces, including a portfolio that is really a compilation of all your teacher work. So, roster, goal sheets, your syllabus that you'll design for your students, grades. We're going to be collecting the final portfolios for the first semester in a few weeks, and then we'll include the full grades for the semester. And then also there are smaller written assignments throughout the semester that are not too onerous. And then at the very end, we do have a final paper requirement. That this year, the way we've done it is in the fall, we did a required education law or policy paper for the as a final paper. Students could pick the topic. I asked for their proposals about a month in advance just to give them some feedback on whether I thought they could stretch it out for the page limit. And just content-wise, where to focus. And in the spring, we've actually, this year, we're going to do an option for the fellows. They could either write another substantive education law or policy paper, or they can write a reflective piece responding to a question about whether they feel they've been successful in teaching constitutional literacy throughout the year. We ask them, give them some guidelines for what that means. But, yeah, I mean, it's, I'll let Ashley maybe say, I mean, say more about seminar in terms of, you know, from a student's perspective.
Yeah, I don't think it's anything that's very demanding of your time. I mean, I think the program wants you to focus your time on teaching. And a lot of the requirements that Professor Arjani just listed are things that you should be doing anyway for your class, like lesson planning. You're going to have that, you know? I mean, quite honestly, in our last seminar, we had to email in a lesson plan. I just, 5 minutes, I went into my documents. I made it a little bit more structured so other people could understand what I was thinking when I wrote that down. And I submitted it, like, that's part of your grade. Mm-hmm. So it's really, I mean, it's not taxing. The final paper, it doesn't take that long because you get to choose the topic, and it should be something that you're interested in. You know, most of the fellows who participate in Marshall Brennan are interested in education, which is such a massive field that you can choose anything you want. And it's nice, it's different from your other law school classes because you get to write about what you want, it's quite open. And, you know, the professors are going to help you if you need it, so.
So there are two different curriculum tracks?
Yes.
They are?
The Common Law Survey, which is based on We the Students. It's a textbook that Professor Raskin wrote. It's now, when you guys teach, it'll be in its fourth edition. And the second, and that's a compilation of all the Supreme Court cases that deal with students' rights in schools. So it's a little bit broader than the second curriculum, which is called Youth Justice in America. And Youth Justice was developed in response to the students' interests. Many of our students have either direct or indirect contact with law enforcement, and they really wanted to know what their rights were in that context. And so we developed a second textbook. We also offer a third course, technically, that we might revive in one or two classes next year, that is a hybrid of the two curricula. But for a variety of reasons, I prefer not to do that hybrid. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, there are two different classes.
Other questions?
Yes.
Are the courses for high schoolers a semester or year-long courses, or would we be teaching two semester courses?
Good question. Another thing I've tried to move towards is having semester-long classes in all of our high schools. Well, you don't need to know the history, but basically that works out better for everybody. For the fellows, that gives you an opportunity to do it once, you know, do it as best you can the first time, but you certainly learn how to be a good teacher through that process, and then to have a second opportunity to really, you know, kind of tweak things so that you're doing it even better the second time. We do have one or two classes still that are year long, so if for some reason that's your preference, you know, again, as Ashley mentioned, you can certainly mark that down on the information sheet.
Sure, yeah, please.
Okay, yeah, just really quickly in the time we have left, I just wanted to tell you guys just a little bit about my experience so far. There were basically two reasons why I wanted to sign up for this project. One was that I strongly believe in access to a quality education, and I think that's a big problem in our country right now. I would love it if stuff like this was required, because there are so many brilliant minds here at a school like this, and I think it's a waste to not, you know, try and help high school kids with this. They're at that age where it's like a teacher can have a really big impact on them. So I think it's just really important to me. I think almost all the fellows would agree with that. Another reason is I just think it's fun. Like, high school kids are really funny, and they're just so entertaining. And I think it's really cool since I'm still at an age where I can somewhat identify with them, and I can still quite clearly remember what it was like to be in their shoes. I think it's just cool to almost relive that, and just to see how their minds work. It's so entertaining. I think it's, as a lot of people have asked me so far what the time commitment is. I think it's typical of a 3-credit course. It might be slightly more work, not work, slightly more time because of, you know, the time it takes to get to your school or whatever. But it's the thing is that it's fun. It's been a really cool experience for me to work with the students. I was in charge of the moot court competition that we have for the students here at the school. And one of our students that entered was awarded best petitioner. And that was just so cool. I don't think he ever thought that he would make that or get that award. We had no idea that he was going to end up winning the whole thing. So it was just really cool to see him get into that. And he was the most, it's funny because the student is so quiet otherwise, like never talks in class. I would ask him the whole time when we were training him, like, all right, how do you feel? You know, competition's tomorrow. You're feeling really good about it. And he'd just be like, mm-hmm. Like, never get more than one word out of him. And then he would stand up, and in front of, like, in the final round, there's a number of actual judges from DC courts. And they're, like, full in their robes. They walk in. It's like, please rise. Everybody rises. It's like, I was shaking in my seat for him. And, like, me and my other teachers were just like so nervous, and so he stands up, our student stands up, and it's so amazing to like, he just knows the whole case, he killed it, and then that was the first time I think he was nervous, and after he, of course the whole time, you know, judges during a moot court, they're asking you questions the whole time, they never let you stop to breathe, and so afterwards he came around, and he sat down, and he turned to us. And the first time I ever heard him say more than one word to me, he goes, that was hard. And it was just so, he was so into it. And I think that was, it's just cool to, you know, be a little bit of a part of some teenager getting recognized like that when, it, you know, it might be the first time that he's ever accomplished something like that. And who knows if that's, you know, going to end up being something that he remembers and that affects the rest of his life. I don't know. But yeah, I just think it's really cool to be a part of that, and it's just every time I go teach, there will be someone in class that says something hilarious. That like I get so many good stories out of this. It's really, really funny, and it's a nice break from law school. So I mean, you're still getting credit. You know, if you try, you're gonna get a good grade in this class. So that's another benefit, and it's really rewarding personally.
I have a question. I used to live with high school students in like when I was in undergrad, and I just wanted to know what I know there can sometimes be issues when you have a co-ed classroom and you're a young female with some of the young male students, and how as a fellow you handle that.
Again, it depends on what school you get placed at. I'm teaching at a charter school, and the DC charter schools are, it's a lottery. That's how they get in. So it's not, they're not academically superior to anyone else. It's just plain lottery. But there's a big difference, I think. So far I haven't had a problem like that at my school. I know others have had minor problems. I wouldn't say it's anything big. And the way that they deal with it is that they just like, they either say that's disrespectful to me, or they joke back, and it depends on how you want to handle it. I think, you know, it's just what your personality is. I don't think it's that big of a problem.
Okay. I'm going to say one more word. I love what Ashley said about moot court because I forgot to say that. But also, I want to make sure if you didn't sign up at the table, please just put your name and email address so I can make sure to send you information about how to apply. I just want to emphasize, she mentioned that she was with her co-teachers, although she worked on moot court, and I didn't mention that you're teaching with another partner basically every other day in most of our placements, but you also have another pair that you're teaching with. So there are actually 4 law students teaching one class at each high school, and there are some exceptions to that. But as you can imagine, any class anywhere taught by 4 different people can be chaotic. So it's very important that you have an interest in collaboration and understand that collaboration is key to success in this program. I mean, it's not a great setup, to be honest with you, but it's the only way that we could move into a situation where we would have our own classes and still be, you know, respectful of the fact that law students have, you know, other commitments, like their own classes. So for you guys to teach every day would, you know, is a challenge. Although I will tell you, the first couple years of the program, if I talked to alums from, and I was one of the first fellows in the program, if you talk to any alums and tell them that you're teaching, you know, that the fellows are not only teaching every other day, they're like, why? You need to change that. That's ridiculous. They should teach every day. But, you know, that's not the way it is. So that regular collaboration means constant emails. It means weekly meetings with your partners. So obviously it helps if you like them already. So if you, you know, not only should you pick your partner, but if there's another pair that you'd like to work with, we would love for you to propose that on your applications as well. So we'll ask for you that. Once we select the fellows, we'll ask for that information. But it's just something to be thinking about. So I would say you haven't asked this question, but I'll just say whenever anyone asks me about the program and the challenges of this program, the number one challenge I would say is getting law students to work with one another. You're all smart. You all have, you know, started your own whatever mentoring program, you know, nonprofit organization, whatever it might be. You've been very focused on leadership, and that's fantastic. But in this context, it's actually collaborative leadership. So you're working with three other people who have an equal voice in the class, and so that's a challenge. But it's also a great learning opportunity. This afternoon, literally before I went to Opportunity State, got a reference call for a former fellow who was interviewed for a job, and the first question the person asked me was, do you think this person could be a team player? Because our office works very closely with one another, and we need to know that this person can walk in and understand why that's so important. And I could say with examples, yes, you know, because I had witnessed this person relating to their partners. So anyway, we're keeping you over here. You can certainly find me, or Ashley, I'm sure, would be happy to answer more questions. Maybe we'll put our email addresses up. But my office is here on this floor in the Law and Government Suite, 515C. Feel free to come by and see me. Or also you can email, the Gmail account is checked regularly by Heidi Samuel, who's our Dean's Fellow in charge of the selection process. So she can also help you with questions. But I encourage you all to apply, and I hope that we've been able to answer your questions. If we haven't, let us know. Thank you.